This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is Chris Teague. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jack. Yet again, a wonderful day here in Maine.
Yeah, you said 90 degrees. That seems like incredibly warm for Maine, but maybe not, huh?
We are touching summer here this week, so hopefully it'll stick around for a while.
Yeah. Well, I think summer in Maine would be absolutely terrific. I spent a few days anyway, in Maine long ago in a summer, and it was spectacular. I just love the heck out of it, and I remember it still, so I envy you for that. I am on the West Coast, and one thing that occurred to me, Chris, is we're, I think, in episode 7 or 8 in terms of doing this as a podcast, and we really haven't let people know about who we are and what we do, a little bit about you, but tell us a little bit more about you and just how you make a living day to day and all that stuff.
Yes. Well, I live in Maine. My wife and two kids live here in Midcoast Maine with me. We're about 10 miles from the ocean, just close enough to smell it on a good day. I've been riding in the car, the automotive space, for about 3 years now, most heavily in the past 2 years with you, Jack, and a few other sites. I write for Forbes and The Drive as a news writer on a daily basis. Cover technology and other things for Ward's Auto and Kelley Blue Book and just kind of all over the place. The joke is whoever will sign my paycheck, but it's not really a joke because it's a great industry to be a part of. And I got my start working in technology and writing software guides. If there could be anything less exciting than that, I'm very happy to be in the automotive space now, getting to test cars. So that's a great way to get my creative exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is a fun business. I've been in it a long time. I've hosted this show for over 20 years and was editor of Motor Trend Magazine and then executive editorial director at Kelley Blue Book for years and years and years. So I've been around the game. I've actually worked for car companies, too, which was quite an education. So I've been doing this a little bit. But those are our credentials if you're listening in for the first time to America on the Road. We're coming at this from a place of you know, a great deal of knowledge about this and still a great deal of enthusiasm. So that's what's going on here at America on the Road. And what's going on in this show is in the road test segment, we'll be looking at two pretty interesting vehicles. We try to have interesting vehicles for you. Chris, you're driving the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid version of their midsize sedan. And I was driving another midsize sedan, although some people might say it's a little bigger than midsize, and that is the Volkswagen Passat. I had the R-Line version, and that might be a new nomenclature to you, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Our special guest today is a woman named Robin Morio. She works with Nissan in product planning, and she is an expert on the new 2021 Nissan Rogue that was introduced practically as we speak. It was introduced in the last 24 hours, so we will have an extensive interview with her about that vehicle. And before we do that, though, we're going to talk about what's new in the industry. So what is new in the industry, Chris?
Well, Tesla is probably old news for everyone by now. And if it isn't old news, you're probably getting close to being tired of hearing about it. But one big development that came out in the past few days is that the Model S sedan was recently rated by the EPA as having a range of 400 miles, which is quite an impressive achievement. That's more than a lot of vehicles can do on a tank of fuel. So that was very exciting from a tech standpoint in the automotive space. But then also on the other side of that coin, Volkswagen, with their electrified future rapidly approaching, the ID.4 crossover that they have been teasing repeatedly or has been spy-shotted repeatedly over the past few months, was seen very recently this morning, I think, uncamouflaged, which will be quite a big competitor for Tesla, not necessarily the Model S, but, you know, a 300-mile range and what I can only assume to be a much lower price. So Tesla's got a lot more competition coming right up, but they're still pushing along very, very strongly.
Well, hey, let's kick that around a little bit, because when you look at market share in EVs, there's Tesla is the 800-pound gorilla, and then another 800-pound gorilla, and maybe a third one, and then you have everybody else. You know, I guess Chevy has got some volume with the Bolt EV, but volume other than that is minuscule at best. Do you think that's going to change as full-line manufacturers like Volkswagen and, you know, certainly Audi is in there now, pitching, and we're going to see some EVs, I think maybe as many as 100 EVs by 2025, 100 different EV models. What's your take on that?
Bring it on. I'm excited about it. But I do think the balance will shift a little bit. You know, we could spend 2, 3, 4 episodes talking about the challenges that EVs face in the marketplace. I think when Ford, when the Mach-E comes out, that'll be a big, it'll be really interesting to see what that does to change the balance. You know, a lot of people talk about range and range anxiety, but charging times and availability of chargers, you know, here in Maine, we only have, I think, one charger within an hour drive of me. So, you know, unless people are willing to start putting these things in their homes, I think it's going to be hard for anybody to break through. But Tesla has definitely done the best job so far, without a doubt.
Yeah, well, and it's kind of easy to sell vehicles if you're selling every vehicle at a loss, right? Or maybe easier. I don't characterize what Tesla has done as easy at all. They've done a remarkable job. But at the same time, when you are competing and then start to have to make money by selling electric vehicles, and maybe the large global manufacturers won't have to make money by selling electric vehicles, as long as they're making money with their internal combustion engine vehicles. I think that's going to be a big challenge to Tesla going forward, is they can be price undercut by manufacturers that don't have to make money selling those electric vehicles.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at Ford alone, the F-150 could probably subsidize the Mach-E to run at a loss for years to come, but we could talk about that another time.
Right. Another thing that we could talk about is electric pickup trucks, and there will be an electric F-150 not too distant future, and a bunch of startups are also in the electric pickup truck business, so that'll be fascinating to see how all that unfolds.
I agree. There's news from Nikola and Rivian, and everything is popping up so quickly. This is a very exciting time to be studying it all.
Right. Any other news you'd like to put out there before we go to the next segment?
I think that was the most exciting thing on my radar for today.
Okay. Well, there you go. It sounds like an exciting time there in Maine at 90-degree temperatures, and summer has happened there. So we will, when we come back, we'll be road testing a couple of vehicles, a couple of mid-sized vehicles, the Passat R-Line from Volkswagen and the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. I'm Jack Nerad, and with me is Chris Teague. Thanks for being with us. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. This is Jack Nerad back with you, and it is road test time here on America on the Road. Road test time makes sense, right, on America on the Road, where we look at the newest and greatest and most wonderful cars, and some other ones, too, on this show that's been around for quite a while now. Interesting cars we're going to test this time around, the Volkswagen Passat R-Line and the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid. In some ways, somewhat competitive, and yet I don't know that, you know, somebody who would consider one would consider the other. I guess that's kind of the definition of competitive, though, isn't it? What's your take on that, Chris? Do you think they're competitors?
I think in some worlds they might be. The R-Line has got the sporty appearance package going on, and the Hybrid has quite a good appearance from the wheels and everything, give it a good sporty look. But I don't think that on style or substance they're going to be direct competitors. But they probably cross the same shopping list for a few people.
Yeah, well, why don't you tell us about the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid?
Absolutely. I tested the limited trim, so it starts just above $35,000. And the big headline here is fuel economy, which for any hybrid it should be. But a four-door car with a load of backseat space is able to get 51 miles per gallon on the highway. I saw right around that, if not a little bit more, in my week of driving. To get anywhere here in Maine is to drive on the highway. So I had plenty of time to test out that number. It's got a solar panel that Hyundai says will charge the battery 2 miles of range per day. I don't know if that's completely true, but I do know that I never fell below 50% battery, and that was on driving it, you know, pretty much every day with you know, pretty spiritedly. So there's not a lot of one pedal driving in my world. The interior is very comfortable. The limited trim, leather seats, heated and cooled seats, wireless device charging, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. So from a tech nerd's dream, and I consider myself an avid tech nerd, from a tech nerd's standpoint, it's a dream. So absolutely no complaints in that regard. It is a little bit odd, the changeover between hybrid, or the handover between the hybrid system and the gas engine. There was a little bit of lurching in the six-speed transmission at low speeds as it kicked over from first to second gear. But that kind of faded out as the car warmed up. And so I think that was probably the biggest complaint from a drivability standpoint. My kids loved it. My neighbors had a weird comment. The backup sounds that it makes, it plays a very light beeping sound and almost sounds like a spaceship when it's backing up so people can hear the car coming, which just puzzled everyone in my neighborhood as I backed out of the driveway.
I'm interested to know how you know what a spaceship sounds like.
That's just how it was described by my seven-year-old daughter, so I'm going to stick with that.
Okay. Maybe she's dealing with aliens and you just don't know it, Chris.
She's a lot smarter than I am, so it's completely possible.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Overall, just a great car. I was very impressed. Fuel economy, top of the list. The comfort was great. The kids had plenty of room in the back seat. But like I said, the transmission was just a little lurching in, at low speeds. Otherwise, a great ride all around.
Yeah. Well, it certainly is a good-looking vehicle as well. I'm not certain I would pick the hybrid version as the one I would take. There are other internal combustion engine powered vehicles. Well, I guess a hybrid has an internal combustion engine too now, doesn't it? Said the automotive expert. But certainly, I think there's plenty of reasons to take a good look at the Hyundai Sonata overall and the hybrid version certainly too. The vehicle I was driving is in some ways competitive with that, but maybe not. We're talking about the Volkswagen Passat. Whenever I get into a Passat, I always feel like I'm in a larger car than a midsize car, even though it's termed a midsize car, and it competes both price-wise and in a lot of other ways against other midsize cars, like the Sonata, like the Nissan Altima, like the Honda Accord, and the Toyota Camry. So, you know, it's got that going for it. It has a massive back seat, I think, is one of the big selling points of the Passat. Certainly as a car for a family. I think in the last episode, we talked a bit about sedans and families. And if you have a four-person family, a Passat would be, I think, a terrific car for you. It is powered by a 2-liter four-cylinder engine. And it doesn't matter whether you're getting the sporty R-Line, which is the one we had, or you're getting something else. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get 174 horsepower. From this 2-liter 4, which isn't a ton of power. The good news is you have 206 pound-feet of torque, and it's a pretty broad rev range, so it feels livelier than 174 horsepower would tell you it should. The transmission isn't all that modern either. It's a 6-speed Tiptronic shift with steering wheel-mounted shift paddles, so not bad, but, you know, certainly not leading edge, not an 8 or 9 speed or 10 speed or something like that. Probably doesn't need to be and gets good fuel economy. It's a great road trip car because of its immense interior room and its giant trunk. Very comfortable, as I said, and it is fitted with Volkswagen's MIB. I think that's Men in Black. I'm not sure exactly what it's, no, it's MIB2, a touchscreen infotainment system. This uses, and you're a tech nerd, so you'll get this, capacitive touch sensors like a smartphone. So it's not like the resistive touchscreens that you see in so many of those lesser cars. This facilitates swiping and pinching, which, depending on who's in the car, you might not want to do. Just be aware of that. All 2020 Passats have a nice level of standard safety and driver assistance tech, including forward collision warning, automatic braking with pedestrian detection. That's always good. You want to detect those pedestrians and try to miss them. Blind spot monitor and rear cross traffic alert. That's all there. As you climb up the ladder there in terms of price, you can get adaptive cruise control with lane keeping assist. So all swell. This is a nice over-the-road car. I'm not sure it's the first midsize vehicle I would look to buy, but it certainly is competitive and there's a lot to like about it. What's your take on the Passat?
I agree. I think the R line, they split it out from, it used to be like an appearance package for a certain trim. So I like how they split it out. The big wheels look great. The dark trim pieces. You brought up the infotainment system. I've long thought that Volkswagen has one of the best in the business. That capacitive touchscreen, and I don't know if your Passat did it. The last one I drove did, had a sensor that kind of sensed your hand reaching for the screen and brought up certain menu options as your hand got close to the screen. And it's just a very intuitive system to use, especially when the car is moving. So there's not a lot of deep menus to cycle through to find.
And here I thought I had a really smart hand, but it's actually the machine, I guess. Huh?
And you're right about backseat space. You know, a lot of automakers are going the sort of coupe direction and shaping their roofs, the sloping, heavy sloping roofs. And the Passat still has that very gently sloping roof, if it slopes at all. So there's plenty of headroom back there, and there's a lot of leg room as well. So
right.
Worked well for us with all four of us in the car.
Right. Massive trunk as well, so we like that. So, you know, these are really a couple of keepers, the Hyundai Sonata Hybrid and the Volkswagen Passat R-Line. We like them a bunch, and so that's our road tests of those two vehicles. When we come back, we'll be taking some listener questions, so be prepared for that, and we'll try to be prepared for that, too. Thanks for being with us on America on the Road. I'm Jack Nerad, and with me is Chris Teague. We appreciate you being with us. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you, along with Chris Teague, and we thank you so much for being with us. It is the time in our show when we take listener questions. If you'd love to, it's probably putting it a little too dramatically, but if you'd like to give us a question, we'd certainly like to give you an answer to that question. If it's about something automotive, all the better, because that's our area of expertise. And so submit it to editor@drivingtoday.com, editor@drivingtoday.com, and we'll get that question and get it on an upcoming show. And let us know where you are and where you're listening to this, and also, you know, when you're not at home and where your valuables are when you do all that. And we'll stop by maybe when you're not there and break into your home. No, we won't do that, but we will take your listener questions. And here is a listener question. A lot of people are experiencing this. They want to know what to do to put their car back in service. They have not been driving it maybe for weeks on end as they've been adhering to stay-at-home orders. What's your advice for people on that, Chris?
Well, the good news is having let your car sit for just a few months or even using it sparingly over a few months is a lot better than having it sit for a few years or even longer. The first thing, there are a few things. You should be checking your tires to make sure that the air pressure and tread is still intact. Obviously, not sitting for just a few months is not going to wear them out completely, but no bulges or cracks and things like that. You'll want to check your oil, make sure the oil level is normal. Get an oil change if you haven't in a while. Hopefully, if you parked it for a long time, you parked it with a reasonable, and I say reasonable, so over a half a tank of fuel. But if you haven't, you should have that checked out by a mechanic just in case some sediment has kind of settled in the tank. And look under it for fluid leaks, check your battery charge, and take a look at the wiring and hoses. Now, you don't have to be a mechanic to do that. I certainly am not, but you take a look over and make sure nothing has burst or drained or leaked while it has been parked. And then the big thing, and this is going to be...
Yeah, if there's a big puddle on the garage floor, that's kind of a tip-off that maybe something is wrong.
Yeah, that's an easy tell. And the big thing is, and this is especially true for people who live places like I do where wildlife is abundant. If your car has been sitting for weeks or months at a time, critters love to nest in all the little crevices and cracks and nooks and crannies under the hood and the wheel wells and so on. And so some people are used to looking in their wheel wells for cats and things that like to kind of hang out there while it's warm, but you should be checking under your hood. There have been a large increased number of people taking their cars into the shop with mice damage or rodent damage, birds nesting under the hood, and all sorts of funky things like that. So you may not have that problem if you live in a very urban area, but for most of us, or a lot of us, it's something we should check out.
Well, and I'll tell you, even living in a pretty urban area, as I do, pretty close to Los Angeles, there's varmints here too. I mean, there's animals that get into people's cars, and if they're just sitting around, that can happen. My daughter is always complaining that there are spiders in her car, and so I have to be the spider guy and clean them out. So there's that. Let's take on a whole different issue here. There's a question about the future of autonomous vehicles, and some people think that what we have just gone through or are still going through with the pandemic going on has put the brakes on autonomous vehicles. Other people think it might have accelerated the development. What's your take on that, Chris?
I think it certainly accelerated the conversation about the development of autonomous vehicles. As people want to spend or don't want to be around other people in vehicles, it's gotten them thinking about what could, you know, speed this process up a little bit. In terms of the actual development of autonomous vehicles, I think there are many factors standing in between where we are today and that sort of realization of the future. Legislation, you know, we live in a country made up of 50 states that have 50 different sets of laws and regulations around driving. The technology itself is still in heavy development, so I think that's going to be another big challenge. You know, how do you make a vehicle operate as well in a countryside as it does in an urban center? And then there's training the people or educating drivers. So how do we actually make money off of this and sell it to a public that is, you know, apprehensive of such things? But I do think we'll see, you know, we're already seeing, I should say, some companies like Cadillac with Super Cruise and Tesla, who we talked about earlier, with Autopilot, rolling out sort of lesser degrees of autonomy in their vehicles that are more driver assist than full takeover. So I think that's much more reasonable to expect in the next at least 5-10 years probably. And even beyond that, I think it's going to be a while before we see anything resembling kind of that driverless car future that we all imagine.
Yeah, well, I think that's very good analysis, Chris. I think, you know, a lot of people were excited maybe 2 or 3 years ago, thinking that maybe by now, certainly by 2025, we're going to see, just a ton of autonomous vehicles on the road. And I just don't think it's going to happen in that kind of time frame. And heck, it might not happen for, 10, 15 years, depending. Another thing that mitigates against this is the fact that this stuff costs a lot of money. And getting to that complete level of autonomy, that level 5 where the car does everything for you, it just drives all the time and you don't have to do anything. That's a big stretch to get a machine to do what humans can do in all the varied tasks that they do when they're driving cars. You know, a lot of people certainly suggest that autonomous cars will be safer than human-driven cars, and maybe we'll get to that point, but I think that's a long way off.
I agree. It turns out that for all the things that humans do poorly, we actually are pretty decent at controlling vehicles. So I think if we do see anything that's fully autonomous in the near future, I say near as in like next 5 years, it'll be sort of a limited range, kind of geo-fenced mass transit option. You know, GM and their Cruise subdivision or division, I guess I should say, brought out an autonomous bus a few months ago, actually almost 6 months ago now. And that's probably much more of what we're looking at in terms of driverless, at least in maybe both of our lifetimes.
Right. Well, I'm right with you. And so that is our answer to that question, and to be continued, certainly. When we come back, we'll be talking with Robin Morio. She is a product expert from Nissan on the Nissan Rogue, all new for 2021 and going to be introduced in the fall. So we'll have an extensive interview with her when we come back. So stay with us right here on America on the Road with Chris Teague. I'm Jack Neerat. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Neerat back with you, and we have a special guest who is an expert, an absolute expert, has lived with the product for years and years and years. The new 2021 Nissan Rogue is the product we're talking about, and Robin Morio is the person we're talking with, and thanks so much for being with us, Robin.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Let's talk about how important, let's set the stage here, let's talk about how important the Nissan Rogue has become to the brand, because it's a powerhouse, isn't it?
Yeah, we have surpassed, the Rogue sales have surpassed Altima as our best-selling vehicle in the United States. So the new Rogue is going to be a showcase of all of our new technologies and really strengthen the brand in the United States.
Let's dive into technology because that seems to be front and center. I was struck when I watched the introduction video about the Rogue yesterday, how little was said about powertrain and how much was said about everything else. So, and that's kind of as it should be, I think, these days. In a lot of ways, the powertrain is a given and it's terrific, but it doesn't really elicit as much comment as a lot of the other technology that's on a particular vehicle. So let's talk about that for a bit. What do you think is most important for consumers to know about?
Well, I think for the CSUV segment, which is where Rogue lies, those customers are really looking for a couple of key things. And while powertrain is important, it's not necessarily what the powertrain does, but it's how it's able to make the vehicle safe and secure for the customers and the drivers and the passengers in the second row. So while we did update the powertrain for this next generation of Rogue, we did keep the same 2.5 liter four-cylinder engine, and we just updated it to improve the horsepower and torque and give excellent fuel economy. So I understand that we didn't really speak about powertrain a lot during our reveal and the videos that we made. However, it's really important that as we understand that our customers are looking for a fuel economy number and not necessarily what the, you know, latest technologies are that will give it, you know, a hybrid or, you know, a downsized turbo. So we're trying to be, you know, true to Nissan and true to our powertrain strategy in that nature. And that's why we maintained just the one powertrain at this time.
Yeah.
Additionally, it's about the safety. So you can take a vehicle and be able to pass on a freeway or, you know, being able to get out of harm's way quickly. And that's really where the key of powertrain for CSUV is. It's in that fuel economy and that quick acceleration to get out of harm's way.
Well, and rightly so. I think getting out of harm's way and having a vehicle that can accelerate when you need it to is critical. But and getting a good fuel economy number, maybe not quite as important right now as it might be in the future. But certainly it's something to look at over time, and it also just indicates overall efficiency. Those things are important, but when it comes to safety and creature comfort, that's really where it's at and where the competitive game, I think, is going to be won or lost right now. Tell us about those issues.
Again, we went to as many focus groups as we could. We asked our own consumers. We asked our competitors' consumers, what is it that you are looking for your next vehicle, meaning if they're intending into the CSUV segment. And what we found is by no means it was the number one item. It was safety. And safety, not passive, not active, but overall holistic safety. How do we deliver that in the most comprehensive and affordable package that we can? Because we didn't get the vehicle any bigger. They specifically intend this segment because of its size. And they have a smaller family, whatever. But then safety. So is it 5-star for NHTSA? Is it, you know, TSP plus from IHS? So we discussed all of these internally. And what we came up with was we wanted to give the absolute safest Nissan Rogue ever in the best packaging that we could possibly give. So it's the active safety and then of the Safety Shield 360, for example. You have forward emergency braking, rear emergency braking, blind spot warning. All of these technologies give a comprehensive 360-degree view of the safety from an active point of view. And that is really where we found our customers were interested in where they want their vehicle to be.
I mean, active safety is very important because the goal of active safety, of course, is to avoid a collision as opposed to survive it. I mean, it's great to have things like airbags and seat belts and all those things that'll help you survive a collision, but far better to avoid the collision overall. And I think the Nissan array of safety equipment is among the best out there. You've described it in general, but what are some of the specific pieces of safety equipment that you think are most important for people to know about?
Thank you. Yes. So Safety Shield 360 is standard on every grade of the 2021 Nissan Rogue. And probably the number one item that our customers like the best is blind spot warning. So it'll tell you in the indicator on the outside mirrors if there's somebody in that blind spot, and it's very easy for you to see And all of our customers were like, that was the greatest thing. And while I, you know, as someone in product planning, that technology has been around for quite some time, it really floored me that was what all of our customers were really, you know, gravitating towards. So we just made it standard and made sure that everyone could have it.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of that is everybody can relate to that and has probably had a vehicle in their blind spot and then been startled by that, hopefully just startled and not in a collision resulting from it. But it just answers a consumer need pretty simply. So I can see why it would be very, very popular.
Yeah, and we have an all-new platform. So from the passive safety side, this new platform has been designed to not only give, you know, the front occupants a secure structure, but we've also made sure that the overall members, the floor members, actually encompass the second row as well. We've made this kind of cocoon, if you will, of a safety structure so that no matter who is in the vehicle in whatever position, that they'll be safe.
Makes a lot of sense. I think also you mentioned the fact that the Rogue is often driven by young families. That means car seats are important, right? Car safety seats, child safety seats. And I think you've gone kind of out of your way to make certain that the Rogue accommodates those too. Talk about that, would you?
Of course. So I'm a mom of two. I've done every configuration of seats that you could imagine as well. So I know firsthand the difficulty it is to install car seats and to make sure that your baby is exceptionally safe. So for the new generation of Rogue, we're actually allowing for a rear-facing car seat to be in the middle position of the second row because that's the safest position possible in a vehicle. And what's unique about our Rogue as opposed to, you know, some of our competition is that the buckle structure for the remaining places in the second row are very easy to get to, no matter if there's even a rear-facing infant child seat in the middle position, and two adults can sit on either side, or a latched booster behind the passenger with a adult behind the driver. So we've made it so that the rear seat can be configured in such a way that anybody can sit in any position, no matter if you're in a rear-facing infant seat, a front-facing booster, five-point latch booster seat, a regular booster seat, or a full-size adult. So it's really to accommodate any type of passenger wherever they wish to sit.
Right. And of course, we're talking about a typically a five-passenger compact sport utility vehicle or SUV, crossover SUV. Describe that overall market, would you? You know, who is buying vehicles in that market and what are they really looking for?
So what we've noticed is that there's actually bimodal customers that are going into the CSUV segment. There's those young families, those young Gen Y families, and they're waiting a little bit in life to get their careers established until they have kids. And then they tend to have kids quickly, and they're what we call baby clustering. On the other hand, on the other mode, we actually are seeing empty nesters getting the vehicle as well. It's easier to get in and out of, you know, it fits all their needs, it's not too big, and also they can take their grandkids and on occasion if they wish. So what we're noticing with the Gen Y is that they're researching and they're trying to figure out what's the safest and what's best value for their family. And then oftentimes the empty nesters are just buying what they're known for with their brand. And what we're doing is making this a family approach. So if they know that this is a safe vehicle, that they're going to go that way as well. Mm-hmm. So bimodal, you have those young families and then, you know, the empty nesters.
Right. Those old people. Boy, do I know who they are.
No.
I mean, they think young, certainly. I mean, it is a great vehicle for an empty nester. And one thing you didn't mention, but I think probably deserves a little bit of a mention, is these people also don't have tons of money. I mean, they have reasonable amounts of money, but you really have to pay a lot of attention to affordability and making certain that everything you put into this vehicle offers value to the customer, don't you?
Yes, of course. I mean, this could be a single vehicle family, for example, and this one vehicle could, you know, be utilized not only for commuting, taking kids to school, but also, you know, road tripping. So it needs to encompass, you know, many different aspects of the person's life.
Let's talk a bit about infotainment and that kind of tech, because that also is crucial these days. So what can you tell us about the new Nissan Rogue that way?
So for infotainment, we actually have ProPilot Assist. And what we've done for ProPilot Assist on the 2021 Rogue is we've upgraded it to include the Navi Link. So once the vehicle knows that it's on the interstate, some sort of local access or minimized access entryway to freeway, the navigation system knows this. So then it will know if whether there's a curve coming up or whether or not you're getting on or off of the freeway. And it will actually help you slow the vehicle down on those two different instances. And this part of Nissan Intelligent Mobility will actually help alleviate some of those common weariness when you're driving too much, or it helps you, you know, concentrate on other things. Additionally, we are offering a 12.3-inch digital dashboard, a full TFT meter behind the steering wheel. It's fully customizable. You can show your Apple CarPlay on it, all the way to your map if you wish. And then additionally, there's a 10.8-inch heads-up display. It's full color, and it'll give you turn-by-turn. It has traffic sign recognition. Really, again, trying to make this vehicle very intuitive so the driver can concentrate either on their passengers or on their, you know, work or whatever it is that they're doing. Additionally, we have an available 9-inch center screen display, again, fully colored and touchscreen. And the Apple CarPlay and Android Auto will actually integrate with it, and you'll be able to show your Waze Maps or your Google Maps. It has voice recognition now, so it's even easier for the driver to be able to communicate with its car.
Well, that's a really amazing array of tech that is available. I mean, you could be describing the tech available in a CUV that costs four or five times as much for Mercedes-Benz or BMW or something like that. And yet Nissan and the Rogue is offering all of that tech for a much lower price in a great looking vehicle. Let's talk a little bit about styling too, because that's certainly important. This new Rogue has a different, a little bit of a different look. Describe that for us, would you?
Of course. So the new front end, we are, it's a new emphasis on our classic V-Motion grille. It's got this big wide V and then this small little thin trying to really make it look premium and luxurious. However, what we've done is we've cut the front end off so it's right up, it's straight upright. And we've really made the haunches, the shoulders of the vehicle kind of come out a little bit to make it look really aggressive, like it was, you know, really trying to hug onto the road. But at the same time, we try to make it look classic and premium and, you know, really bring out not only the strength and that, but we wanted it to be aspiring, like you aspire to be in the vehicle itself. And even from all the way to the rear end where we have these, you know, LED lamps, not only LED headlamps, but LED tail lamps, again, all standard, trying to make, again, that safety message come through. You're going to be able to see this car on the vehicle coming towards you. No one's going to want to pull out in front of you or cut you off in traffic. And, you know, you'll be able to do all of these things only by the looks itself. And then on the inside, we have such things as semi-aniline leather that's available with the diamond quilting pattern. There's a shift-by-wire perindle, and what it'll do is actually freeze up all of the space underneath the center console. So you can actually have pass-through storage there, such as an umbrella or a box of tissues or even a thing of baby wipes.
And by Prindle, so what you mean is the gear selector. I don't know that the average civilian is going to know what Prindle means, but that's how you select the gear. You would typically in years past use a stick to do that, but now a shift lever, but now it's very often buttons or some other kind of array, right?
Yes, in this case, it is a little shifter that we do have, but you can put it into park, reverse, neutral, drive.
Right. That's the Prindle kind of acronym, right?
That's the Prindle.
Yeah, exactly. We're speaking with Robin Morio of Nissan about the all-new Nissan Rogue that's coming out soon. How soon will it be coming out? When is it going to be in showrooms, Robin?
Well, not very long. It'll be out this fall.
Okay,
fall of 2020.
Good. That's coming up. We hope to see fall. The way things are going, you never know, but we hope that's going to be true. You talked a little bit about the styling of the vehicle. I would say a lot of times vehicles of this size have a tendency to maybe be a little cute. And I don't think the Rogue is cute. I think it's much more mature. Was there a specific goal of making it a little bit more mature, maybe aspirational?
So what we found on the previous generation, or the current 2020 Nissan Rogue, is that that styling was a little softer, a little bit more maybe feminine. And the curves and how it like flowed from a front to rear, we found out that our consumers tended towards the feminine side, so to the female side. So what we ended up doing was going a little bit more towards the angular, the rigid structure that you see today. And what we've noticed is in all of our focus groups that it happened to appeal to not only the women, but also to more men. And it's not that we're trying to, target more sales towards men, but just like have it more accommodating to any person, really. So yes, I would agree that in the current generation of Rogue, it happens to be a little bit more curvaceous. And in the next generation, we've gone for very angular, and we're going for that athletic, that strong on-road presence.
Got it. Well, that does make sense. What's most exciting to you about this vehicle? You know, is there a feature that you fought for? Is there a particular thing about it that you think is really terrific and blows the competition away? What's most exciting to you about this, coming from a product planning point of view?
So we spent a lot of time developing the second row of this vehicle. And I know that seems ludicrous because the driver is who you're supposed to be, accommodating. But we've noticed that a lot of families drive this car, and the people in the second row are just as important. So as I mentioned earlier about safety, not only do we do that from a vehicle structure point of view, but we also did it on many other things. We have tri-zone HVAC available, so you can change the air conditioner or the heater to whatever the third row or the second row wants. We have second row sunshades that come right out of the door, again, to try to control that temperature. Even if it's a rear-facing infant car seat, or you just want the privacy, or an adult, or the sun's coming in at you. And then we also have a very large amount of floor space back there. And the reason for this is so you can put a flat-screen TV in there if you wish, because the door actually opens up to 85 degrees. So it's very easy ingress and egress. So we really concentrated a lot on the second row, which seems, kind of backwards, but we really put a lot of thought and a lot of effort to make sure that every customer, every driver, every passenger, they're all equally comfortable.
Well, it seems very sensible, especially because these are vehicles often used by young families, and that second row, or even if you're an empty nester, you might know another couple and they're going to ride in the back seat. So making that accommodating, I think, makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, the vehicle is extraordinarily quiet. We targeted some luxury benchmarks to make sure as the trend of quietness in the CSUV segment continues to get quieter and quieter, we wanted to make sure we were as far up in the pack as we possibly could. So consumers are going to notice a drastic difference between this current generation and our new generation Rogue. Additionally, there's USB ports everywhere in the thing, so you can always charge your device no matter what you're doing. So yeah, we thought of almost everything, we hope.
Well, it sounds like, and this is going to come to market, and the market will tell you, but from everything I've seen, this this new 2021 Nissan Rogue is going to be a big winner. Certainly an important vehicle for you, and I think you're hitting the ground running, and you seem like you checked all the boxes, so I wish you good luck with it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time today.
And that's our interview with Robin Morio of Nissan on the all-new 2021 Nissan Rogue. We thank her so much for being with us. And Chris Teague, thanks so much for being with us again this time as co-host on America on the Road. We really appreciate your insights. Thanks so much.
As always, thanks for putting up with me. And I will just remind everyone that if you like what you heard today, wherever you get your podcast, like us and leave us a review. It'll help us bump up the ranks and become more popular over time. And we hope to see you again next time.
We absolutely do. And we live to be more popular. Your help in that is much appreciated. Thanks again, Chris, so much for being with us. And thank you, all you listeners, for being with us. We really do appreciate it. And join us again next time right here on America on the Road on Driving Today.